That was the sound of a cement packing machine. Among the first large industries in the northwest corner of Indiana is the Buffington plant of the Universal Atlas Cement Company. The site chosen was a sandy stretch of land on the western shore of Lake Michigan, about 35 miles southeast of Chicago. Construction of the first unit of this cement plant was begun in 1903, and today the plant covers over 600 acres and employs about 1,200 persons. Today we're reporting on the manufacture of cement, and we will begin our story at the unloading dock. Our guide is Mr. Arch Adams, plant manager at Buffington.
Well, Arch, we're standing now on the loading dock for your company. Right in front of us is the huge ship, the lake steamer, which is named the Irvin Climber. Right behind us is a huge stockpile of material that you use. So I better start by asking you the first obvious question. Where did this boat come from and what is it loaded with?
This boat is one of the Bradley Transportation steamers. Bradley Transportation is a division of subsidiary of the United States Steel Corporation that bring down limestone from Rogers City, Michigan to the various U.S. steel unloading docks in the Gary area. This boat has approximately 11,000 tons, gross tons, of limestone, which is being stockpiled on our dock here.
Now, we're not very close to this, Arch, but down about maybe 150 or 200 yards is a large crane, an arm that sticks out from the boat, and a long conveyor belt running along the arm and the length of that crane, running limestone out and dumping it on top of a huge pile. Now, is that all part of the equipment of the boat, Arch?
Yes, the boom sticking out from the climber is part of the equipment on the climber for unloading the limestone. The limestone is stored in hoppers aboard the ship, and through various conveyors, elevators, it brings this limestone up to this boom, which extends out over our dock onto the storage pile.
I might describe briefly the physical surroundings that we're standing near. This limestone is stacked in tremendous piles, and you may not know the physical characteristics of limestone, but you can probably hear those rocks crumbling in my hand. They come in marble-sized, regular-sized, gravel-type rocks. What happens now, Arch? You've got tremendous piles of limestone here. Now, how do you get it from here to where you want to work with it?
First, may I say that we store the enormous amount of limestone on the dock here during the lake shipping season. That's during the summer, from April the 1st until November sometime. So these boats come in all summer and stockpile enough stone here to carry us during the winter months. We'll have here, come December 1st, over 500,000 tons of limestone, which have to carry us during the winter months. Now, underneath the limestone pile here is a concrete tunnel through which a belt conveyor runs the entire length of this tunnel. The limestone is drawn off from the pile through openings in the tunnel onto the belt, and the belt runs as much as a good mile into the main plant, where it's conveyed by the belt conveyor.
Now, that's our next step, is that right?
That's correct. The Highline building, where the limestone is stored in bins and the various other raw materials used in producing cement.
Right, let's go down there, Arch. We have come now to what they call the Highline Building. We walked up several flights of stairs, and we're standing now in a building which has a magnificent view of Lake Michigan, the harbor, and the long, mile-long conveyor belt that Arch just mentioned. Now, this conveyor belt brings the limestone up into a smaller building and then transfers it onto another conveyor belt. Now, Arch, what's the operation here? How does it work in through this building here?
Hugh, I'd like to turn you over to Mr. Sid England, our assistant plant manager, who can explain this operation to you.
Sid, I just mentioned that the limestone came through that long conveyor belt, which is on somewhat of an angle going up into the Highline building, and then drops off onto this horizontal conveyor belt here running into the Highline building itself. Now, what happens as it moves along this flat conveyor belt here?
As it moves along the conveyor belt onto the Highline, the tripper discharges the stone into the different stone bins.
Now, that occurs right down the line here, doesn't it?
That is right. Yes.
Let's walk down here, Sid. As we walk down, I might explain briefly that to our right here are a large number of bins. Railroad cars are also located up here. And as we walk along to our right also, you can see that flat conveyor belt, which at the moment is not operating, but when it is, carries a large amount of that limestone. Now, the tripper is just a few feet in front of us, so we'll stop right about here, Sid. Sid, that tripper isn't working right now, but suppose you tell us how it would work if it were working.
The tripper is spotted over the first stone bin, and the stone is diverted by the tripper into this bin. When that bin is full, it's moved down to the next one, and so on until all six stone bins are filled.
Now, also along the railroad tracks here are a number of bins, and I wanted to ask you about that. Now, what about this railroad car right here in front of us?
That is filled with blast furnace slag. And the engine brings that up. We're served by the J&E Railroad on this high line. And we handle about 40 cars of cinder in 24 hours.
Now, Sid, that noise interrupted you far down the line down there. What's happening with that noise?
That is the car shakeout we use to unload the cars with. The car doors are open at the bottom, and the car shaker put into operation, and it shakes the material out of the car.
So that's merely shaking that big railroad car, is that right?
That is right.
Well, no wonder it's a little bit noisy from here. You can see that it's shaking the car pretty rapidly. Now, how many bins along here do you have? You have a large number of them, and what are they filled with?
We have 9 slag bins, 1 iron dust bin, and 5 coal bins.
I wanted to wait just a minute, Sid, while the noise died down somewhat, so we can talk a little bit better. Now, I'll go back over that. What do these bins contain here?
Blast furnace slag from the steel mills. And we have 9 of those. 9 of those bins. And we have 2 iron dust bins and 5 coal bins.
Now, this is called the Highline Building. Why do they call it the Highline Building?
Because it's built up in the air so the cars can be run up on the high line and unloaded and then gravity fed into the mill.
All right, now we have all the raw materials here, the limestone and the iron and all this that you just got through mentioning. What happens after they fill the bins here? Where does it go from here?
It goes down into the raw material building where it's processed.
And that's probably going to be our next stop. We'll go over here.
Our next stop, yes.
We'll go over here and talk to Arch just a minute. Arch, we just mentioned to Sid that the raw materials building is where we should probably go next. Is that right?
That's correct. That's where the various raw materials you see here are dried and ground before they go to the rotary kilns.
Right. Let's go down there.
We have come now to the raw materials building, and that noise you hear is that of the dryers which are working. We're standing only a couple of feet away from one of the dryers, and we can look inside a small window and see the fire inside. Now, in order to explain that, we're going to call upon Arch to tell us just exactly what's going on inside that dryer.
Hugh, I'd like to introduce now Mr. Pete Ring, General Operating Foreman, who will explain this part of the operation to you.
Pete, this is a mighty big operation here, and inside there we can see the flames shooting in. We might as well start at the beginning. First of all, the last step we saw was where the limestone and your slag was dropped down the bins. Now, as I can see away back in the corner, the bottom of those big bins, there comes a hopper out of there and onto the belt, which brings it into the dryer. This dryer here, as I understand it, is only slag. Is that right?
That's right. This is only the slag dryer.
All right. Now, how does this work? First of all, what about the fuel? How do you get the fuel in there?
The fuel is pulverized coal blown in with an air blast.
That's through this pipe right here to our left?
Through that pipe.
That's an awful long dryer. It keeps rotating. Now, what goes on inside of there, Pete?
There are lifters inside the dryer which agitate the feed by lifting it up and dropping it through the hot gases of the dryer.
So it keeps rotating that slag inside of there. Is that it?
That is right. The dryer sets on a slight pitch about 3/4 of an inch to the foot, and which it'll work.
on down toward the end and be discharged.
What about the heat? How much heat do you have in there?
The flame is approximately 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, now, what about the limestone? Where do you dry the limestone, Pete?
The limestone is dried at the other end of the mill in six dryers, the same design as this dryer.
Way down there at the other end?
That is right.
Well, now, why do you do it? Why do you dry the limestone and the slag?
It must be dried to remove the moisture that is present in the slag and the limestone on arrival in the plant.
How much moisture do you have in there?
The slag will run approximately 17% moisture and the stone approximately 5%.
Well, now, once you get this slag dried out to the point where you think it's just proper, and also the limestone, what happens to it then?
It is elevated then to hoppers over our ball mills, which are our preliminary mills, and it's ready for the preliminary grind.
Where are the ball mills?
They are just back of us.
And that other room back here?
That is right.
Well, I think perhaps that that's the next place we're going to go. Arch, we were just mentioning that the limestone and the slag, after it's dried, goes into the ball mills. Is that where we go next?
Yeah, we'll go into the grinding department of this same building, Hugh, where the raw materials are pre-ground and then finished ground into a real fine powder before it goes to the kilns for burning to cement clinker.
All right, swell. Let's go in there. Now, that sound that you heard just a moment ago is the sound of the ball mill room, which is just next to the drying room where we stood just a moment ago. Now, at the cement plant, they hand out a little folder here, and I'd like to read just briefly from this folder. I think it describes very picturesquely, Arch, what happens in this room. This ball mill room contains the ball mills. They are lined with armor plate and partly filled with steel balls. Now, as the cylinders revolve, the balls are carried upward by centrifugal force, which holds them in place on steel plates or ribs set inside into the sides of the cylinders. When the balls near the top of the mill, they cascade forward and down onto the charge of raw material, which is ultimately ground to small particles. Now, these ball mills are up to 12 feet in diameter and 10 feet in length. Now, Arch, I have a ball right here in my hand, and we might better explain that a little bit better by looking at this ball and thinking of it in terms of crushing that slag as it comes in there. First of all, the last step we saw was the slag being dried, and then it comes into those big hoppers up there. Now, what happens after that?
The slag is fed into the ball mill. There's a battery of eight ball mills, you can see there, Hugh, that each of these ball mills is fed with what we call a cradle feeder that feeds the material in a certain amount per unit of time. You see what I mean? The ball mill is charged with about 5 tons of 2.5-inch balls. As you read from the literature there, as the cylinder turns, it picks the balls up with the lifters and cascades them down and crushes the material in the mill. By cascading effect and also from attrition grinding, the rolling around of the balls in the ball mill.
What kind of a fine grilling do you get out of this from the balls? I mean, is it like sand when it comes out of there?
Yes, I'd say about a sand sizing, it comes out of the ball mill.
You found this, I suppose, to be the best way to crush this slag and limestone with these steel balls.
That's correct. In the cement industry, I think that ball mills and tube mills or compound mills of that sort are used throughout the cement industry.
Well, now, right here to the right of us, not far away from the ball mills, is a large cylinder rotating. Now, what operation is this?
That's a tube mill.
Is that operating about the same theory?
You said the only difference it has, it's a little longer in length, and it's loaded with smaller balls for the finer grinding. Those balls are 3/4 inch in diameter instead of 2.5 on the coarse grinding ball mills.
In other words, when you bring it out of these mills over here, they go into the tube mills for finer grinding.
Well, we might step back just a little bit before the tube mills and say that the slag, after it's pre-ground in the ball mill, and the limestone, which is pre-ground at the other end of the building in a hammer mill, those two materials go to separate hoppers over the proportioning scales where the two materials are properly blended, as set by the laboratory. And then the combined material goes to the tube mills, where it's grind to a real fine powder.
Now, once you bring this powder out of the two mills, what happens to it then?
It's conveyed to a battery of blending tanks where there are storage silos ahead of the rotary kilns.
Let's go there then.
Okay.
We're standing now right next to two operations. To our left here are two huge silos. Actually, there are more than two, but from where I'm standing, I can only see two. Now, I call them silos, although maybe they have a different terminology for them. But they are certainly tremendous buildings. Now, to our right are huge kilns, which are rotating, and they're on a gentle incline. Now, we're going to describe and talk about those two operations. First of all, Arch, what about these big silos?
Hugh, I think I'll let Sid England explain these operations to you.
All right, Sid, I mentioned that they are silos. Perhaps you call them something else.
We call them blending tanks.
Why do you call them blending tanks, Sid?
The material, the raw mix from the raw material building is blown into these blending tanks where the material is blended. And from the blending tanks, it is blown by compressed air to the burner building.
Now, those are awfully big tanks. How much would you say, Sid, are contained in each tank?
About 2,000 tons in each tank.
2,000 tons. What do you mean, tons? Tons of your basic mixture?
Of raw material, raw mix, yes.
Now, I guess that from the bottom of the tanks, you blow it through those tubes that we can see way down at the end of the building. Is that right?
We blow it through the 10-inch pipes up to the receiving hopper, above the raw feed hoppers in the kill room.
Now, we won't go down that far, Sid. We can probably describe it from here. But we can see those 10-inch tubes going up into the building and then into the hopper. Now, there's huge hoppers down there start at one end of that kiln that we mentioned. That kiln, Sid, is on an incline. I suppose that's to keep the material inside moving towards one end. Is that right?
That is right, and the rotating of the kiln helps to bring it down to the front of the discharge end.
What is the operation in there? There's a tremendous amount of heat coming out of one end of it. What happens inside of there?
The raw mix is fed in one end of the kiln, and of course the hot gases are in the other end. The fire is put into the kiln from the other end, where we have a temperature about 2,700 degrees. The material is in the kiln for about 45 minutes to 1 hour.
Now, Sid, what's the purpose of the heat? Why do you heat it to such a tremendous amount of heat?
We burn the raw material, as we say here. We burn the raw material and make a clinker.
The clinker is what we've been hearing about, but haven't mentioned up to this very point. The clinker actually is the cement, is it not?
That is the material before it's made into cement. It travels to the finish mill from here.
Now, we talked about the heat inside of there. I'm not sure that we mentioned the temperature. How much is the temperature down at this one end?
About 2,700 degrees.
And at the other end?
About 1,500 degrees.
So as the material comes through the kiln, it goes through a varying amount of temperature. Is that right?
That is right.
All right. Now, Arch, we've got the thing inside those kilns. We've got the raw material in there, and it's finally been heated. And as Sid just told us, that makes the clinker. What about the clinker? What happens to that?
Well, the clinker, as it comes out of the kilns, we spray it with water where it goes into the elevators. It elevate it up and drop it out into an open clinker storage where the large amounts of clinker are stored ahead of the finished grinding operation, where the clinker is ground into finished cement. And at that point, during the grinding operation in the finishing mill, a small amount of gypsum is added to it.
Now, that's the next operation that we should go to.
That is correct.
Now, this noise you're hearing in the background comes from a number of large machines and hoppers. Now, Arch, we were talking about clinker storage, and I understand that's right behind the wall here. Is that where the clinkers are?
Yes, as I told you, the clinkers coming out of the kiln are elevated through an elevator and dumped into an open clinker pit, clinker storage building we call it, where there are three overhead cranes that handle the clinkers as they drop out from the elevators from the kilns, and the cranes distribute the clinker throughout the whole storage building so that we get a proper blending of the clinker. It has to be cooled by handling with a crane, and also we get a certain amount of blending by using a crane bucket.
Now these machines that we're standing around, especially these hoppers above us, Arch, what happens in these hoppers right here?
The clinker cranes, as I told you, out in the clinker pit, pick the clinker up out of the storage and dump it into these various hoppers over the Hercules mills. I'd like for Pete Ring to take over part of the discussion here, Hugh.
All right, Pete, now we've got the raw material into the hopper being dropped down into this whirling machine. Now, what is that machine?
And this is what is called the Hercules mill. It's our preliminary mill in the finishing department. There the clinker is reduced to small size, which will go through a 20-mesh screen before being conveyed to the tube mills.
And is that what is happening in there, in that whirling activity? The clinker is being reduced in size.
That's right. It's being crushed between three rolls and a die ring or a circular steel ring, and coming in contact with the clinker reduces it in size.
Reduces it to what? A powder form?
No, to a form of to fineness that will pass through about a 20-mesh screen.
About a 20-mesh screen.
That's right.
Now, what happens then to the material, Pete?
After passing out through the mill at the bottom where it's discharged, it goes by means of screw conveyors to a bucket elevator, where there it's elevated, and to screw conveyors over our hoppers, and it is distributed then among the 22 tube mill hoppers we have in this mill.
We finally reached the point when we have some finished cement?
We are getting close to it.
Well, now let's get back over here to Arch. Arch, Pete just said we're getting mighty close to the point where we have some finished cement. Now, where is that taking place?
Well, the finished cement is being ground in this battery of tube mills. We have 22 tube mills in here, the same as we're in the raw mill. There, the tube mills are loaded with 3/4-inch steel balls, the same as was in the raw mill. And the material, after it comes out of the Hercules mill, as Pete said, was 20 mesh.
Yes.
Now, a 20 mesh screen, I'd say, is about the size of a screen you have on your screen door at home. I'll give you an idea of what the size material that's being fed into these tube mills.
Well, now, let's describe briefly the tube mills from here. Do they have the steel balls in them that we saw in the other tube mills?
Yes, 3/4-inch balls is roughly 20 tons, these 3/4-inch steel balls in each of the 22 tube mills.
22 tube mills, and believe me, they're really big. A huge rotating circular drum, and out of this comes the finished product.
That's correct. The feed going into the mill is regulated by a variable screw conveyor feeder that regulates what we call barrels per hour going into the mill. And we regulate the fineness at the discharge end of the mill by changing the revolutions on the screw conveyor feeding the mill.
Why do you have water pouring over that big cylinder?
That's to cool the outside shell, because there's a great heat given off by the steel balls grinding with the material against the inside lining of the mill. Tremendous amount of heat. So we use the water on the outside shell to cool the mill down, at the same time cool the cement discharge temperature down to a reasonable, so it's not too hot.
Well now, Arch, I suppose that the next obvious step is to put the finished product into some packages, right?
Yes, the finished cement, leaving these 22 tube mills, is collected in a screw conveyor and elevated to a large belt conveyor, which takes the cement over to one of our three stockhouses. We have three storage stockhouses in the plant here where we can store a large amount of cement.
All right, let's go over there.
Okay. Yeah, this is one of our seven packing and loading rooms that we have in the three stockhouses. And to explain this part of the operation, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Roy Marnan, General Packing and Loading Foreman. For your information, Roy will have 50 years service come next February, and I think he should know what he's talking about when it comes to packing and loading.
Well, I would think so. Roy, suppose you tell us a little bit about the operation of the packing and loading department here. Now, First of all, let me ask you about that boy I saw working up there a moment ago with a bunch of levers and sacks, and all of a sudden the sack was filled with cement. Now, how does all that happen?
Well, there are bags placed alongside this man that are made up with a valve in one end that he inserts on a tube, and these machines are automatically set to weigh 94 pounds net of cement. And that
it'll only weigh 94 pounds, so that means each sack will weigh 94 pounds, is that right?
That's right. When the sack is filled to 94 pounds, it automatically goes out of registration, and he removes it from that position and puts a new bag on the spout.
Well, where does the cement come from?
The cement comes from bins in this building. There are 50,000 barrel capacity bins here, and they...
Those right above us there?
Yeah, the cement is withdrawn from the bins by means of screw conveyors to an elevator and elevated to hoppers above these packing machines.
I see. Now, we saw that the boy up there working with the empty bags and the bag being filled by that automatic system. And then what happens to the bag? It looks like it's coming down over a conveyor belt. Is that
it? Yes, it drops down onto a conveyor belt that brings the packages out to the end or an apron from which the bags are taken and put on stevedore trucks and then wheeled either into boxcars or onto automobile trucks.
And they're distributed to whoever wants to buy some cement.
That's right. The customers get it from there.
Well, Roy, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much, and congratulations on spending 50 years with the company.
That's been my pleasure.
Arch, before we leave, I want to ask you something about the packaging. Now, we only see small packages. What else do you have?
Well, we ship not only by package, Hugh. We ship bulk cement also by rail. That is, hopper cars by railroad, and also these automobile trucks, too. In addition to what you've seen here, this part of our packing and loading operation.
Okay, Arch, thank you very much, and thank you very much for showing us through your operation. We certainly enjoyed it.
But Hugh, it's been very nice to have you out here, and it's been a real pleasure to me to make this trip around through the plant with you.